Thank you for everyone being here that can be here for this Bible class, period. As I mentioned in previous lessons, if you have questions about what is said or what is mentioned during this lesson, I'd be happy to field those questions afterwards. Because of the time constraint, because of the worship service to follow, we're going to dive right into this lesson this morning on the sin of gambling. Our theme is to not conform to this world, and this is something that is practiced far and wide by the world as we know it. Like we've been mentioning in other previous lessons, you'll never find the word gambling in the Bible. And we also mentioned that you won't find the word abortion, you won't find the word child molestation or internet pornography or harmful drugs, you won't find these kind of words, but we've also realized that the Bible can condemn something based upon principle. And so we're going to be looking at various principles this morning that would certainly condemn this practice of gambling. Now, it's interesting how many Christians recognize it to be wrong and yet sometimes can partake in some forms or fashions of it. And sometimes there's this arbitrary line that we draw in our mind where there's some forms that are very wrong and blatant, and some that are mild forms of it. And so we want to try and hopefully get to answer that question, where should that line be drawn? Some will say just walking across the street is a gamble, or owning a business is a gamble, or farming is gambling. Are those things truly gambling as we would describe them here this morning? Hopefully we'll answer some of those questions as we go through this study this morning. But as we mentioned, there are principles that we'll see that gambling violates. And the first one is found in 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 2, where there the scripture says, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful. Every penny, dear friend, that you and I have has been a blessing by God. The Bible tells in James that every good and perfect gift comes from above. And you and I will give an account of our stewardship, on how we have treated and handled the blessings of God. In Luke chapter 12, verse 42, there in the parable, the master said, who then is that wise and faithful steward? And you can't be a faithful steward of what God has blessed you with and gamble it away. When you participate in gambling, understand this truth. Your money is gone. You might say, well, there's some that win. Friend, your money is gone. I realize there's some that win from time to time, but often they take those winnings and gamble it again, and then it's gone. There's a saying, the house always wins. And that's true. That's why it's big business. There's one sign that read at this particular casino that you win 25% of the time. I mean, that was an advertisement. That means you lose 75% of the time. How can you be a wise and faithful steward going into an arrangement where you know you're going to lose 75% of the time? You know, describing that to be good odds. I mean, what if someone told you that, you know, you go through this procedure and 25% of the time you get to keep your head? Would you be happy about that? Some bad odds. Gambling, dear friends, is condemned by principle. And this principle here is the first one we share. Principle number two, and that is, do not share in other people's sins. Keep yourself pure. That comes first from 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 22. Many times people say, well, I don't see the harm in gambling because it's just a $2 lottery ticket. And it's because they don't see the big picture of it all. They don't realize what goes into funding that kind of a practice. And when you begin to look at the statistics, you'll never see it as just a small little deal ever again. So let's talk about the widespread problem of gambling. Do you realize that there are billions, billions each day that are lost in gambling legally? And no one really knows how much is done illegally, and that's just where it's not being able to be overseen by the government.
so that they can be able to tax your winnings. All those March Madness pools done at work, that would be illegal. There's no way for them to be able to know who won and how they could tax those winnings. So imagine all those kinds of pools being done. How much more this money would be. One reference I had said it was $910 billion a year to gambling. And so that would be safe then to say billions and billions each day. Further, from 1974 to 94, the amount wagered has risen 2,800%. It's a growing business. Gambling generates more revenue than all other forms of entertainment. Think about that. More revenue than all movies, all spectator sports. I mean, that number should be mind-boggling to us. 10 million more addicts than alcoholics. These statistics I got from PBS.org. You know, two decades ago, two states had legal gambling and 48 states outlawed it. Now the reverse is true. There's 48 states that have some form of legal gambling and only two that have outlawed it, Hawaii and Utah. The fastest growing industry in the world is Indian gambling. There are over 150 Indian casinos in the U.S. As of May 1997. And so we don't want to share in other people's sins. This is a big problem. And it's only getting worse. When our kids ask, why don't we participate in this? Tell them this reason right here. You know, our state lotto will increase the numbers on welfare, the numbers of those going bankrupt, people in poverty. You'll find that they'll advertise in the poorest parts of the city. Now, Scripture tells us to not do harm to the poor, but rather to help them. But rather, casinos are often placed in the poorest parts of the city. Why? Because those are the people that gamble the most. Dave Ramsey said that the lottery is for poor people and for those who can't do math. That's true. You know, people that make $10,000 a year or less spend more on the lottery than any other group. 1 in 5 homeless people cite it for their cause of their plight. It provides wealth to a handful of people at the expense of the masses. You think about that. The next time you see that advertisement, $2 for a lottery ticket. It's much more than that. This is the government's exploitation of the poor. They tax the rich, redistribute it to the poor. The poor then spend it on gambling, and then they take a large chunk of those winnings. You realize if one wins the $300 million lottery, do you know that the government takes $150 million right off the top? 50% is gone to taxes instantly. I mean, it's the hypocrisy of it all. These politicians that tell us they're trying to do good for the poor, knowing that they're going to get their money back in the end anyway through a lot of these revenue-generating activities such as gambling. Further erodes the biblical work ethic. People demand more from the government, yet work less. Promotes irrational behavior, fantasy, despair. It preys on the weak and the vulnerable. It attracts the undisciplined. For every winner, friends, there are millions and millions and millions of losers. And this is affecting the church. You may not know it, but the first $1 million winner of the lotto in Florida was a member of the church. Principle number 3, covetousness is idolatry. You know, Thayer defines covetousness as eager to have more, especially what belongs to another. Now, one might say, well, I don't think that when I'm playing the office pool with my buddies. Well, friend, you need to. I mean, what was your goal? Was your goal to lose what you put in? No, it was to win everybody else's of what they put in. That was what your goal was. It's a preacher friend of mine that when he used to work secularly, he said his manager would often raffle his paycheck. You know, a man, you could have a manager's paycheck, $5 a pop. Was that manager trying to give his money away? Was he trying to be benevolent? No, he was trying to take everybody else's money. And Brett said that he would often take home more than double his paycheck with no tax. In Colossians chapter 3, verse 5, there we see it cited there on the chart. But let's go ahead and turn there to the text. Colossians chapter 3, verse 5. The Bible makes it very clear that if we're Christians, there are certain things we ought to kill in our lives. And so that's why it says in verse 5, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth. Remember again our theme? Don't be conformed to what? This earth, right? This world. These are parts of this earth. Put them to death. What are they? Fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Friends, this is dangerous to the soul. Arsenic to the soul. And that's why he says, you got to kill it, get rid of it, sever yourself from it. I don't care if it's just a couple of dollars. God doesn't care if it's just a couple of dollars. Someone says, well, it's just kind of healthy competition between us buddies. Okay, then take the money out of it then. If it's just competition, if that's all it is, take out the steak. What's the problem? Because then all you'd have is something like sports. But if you take the winner and loser out of the steak, and all you have is just an undetermined event, like I said, sports, then all of a sudden it's not as intriguing. The greed factor is not started within one's heart. Now some, I realize, say, well, that just seems awful innocent. I mean, what's the big deal of just a few bucks between buddies? Well, what we need to do next then is better understand gambling. What it is that we're talking about this morning. Webster defines it as to play a game for money or property. To bet on an uncertain outcome. Notice this definition by World Bible Encyclopedia. Gamblers bet money or something of value as a stake. When the outcome is settled, the winner collects the loser's stakes. So we're wanting to understand gambling better. What components comprise that? Well, notice first off, there is a stake. There's something to be wagered. Something of value. It may be $2 or maybe a wooden buffalo. There's an undetermined outcome. And then we see that there is a winner and there is a loser. Now when you have these four or three elements, depending on how you're counting winner and loser, you have gambling. You have what we're talking about. But if you take one of these away, then we're not talking about that this morning. Gambling is comprised of a wager, an undetermined event, a winner, and a loser. And that'll answer a lot of questions for us then. That'll help clarify a number of things. It'll make sense why these practices that we're about to state are considered gambling. And by the way, they're considered gambling even by the world. And I'll share that with you here. Notice, this is by Gamblers Aware. And they talk about types of gambling. Betting. Bingo. Why is this gambling? Well, because there is a stake, there's an undetermined event, and there's a winner, and there's a loser. Same with casinos and gaming machines. Lotteries, pools, spread betting, raffles, and even mobile and online remote gambling. In Minnesota, this was a list of the most popular gambling activities. And raffling topped the list. Now, I emphasize raffling because there's sometimes well-meaning Christians that don't feel that that's gambling. They say, well, it's done for a good cause. And I'm concerned about helping out a good cause. Then just make a contribution. The world recognizes raffling is gambling. Why? Well, because there is a stake, there is an undetermined outcome, a winner and a loser. Everybody else that put their monies in are the ones that are losing if they don't end up winning based upon that undetermined outcome. Like that boss that was trying to raffle off his paycheck. That's gambling, friends. Now, when you have these elements that we've talked about together, you have gambling. Now, again, that answers a lot of other questions for us. You've heard people say, well, life is a gamble. No, not in this type of definition. Now, I agree with you, life is a risk. But not all risk is gambling. We see that there's more involved in regards to that definition. Just like we're going to talk about in a short few moments during the worship service hour about dancing. I may be tapping my foot. Am I dancing? No, but it's bodily movement. Well, that's just a fraction of the definition of dancing. You don't have a complete definition. And that's often what people do with this topic of gambling, to kind of make the topic gray so that you can't come down hard and fast on various practices. Say, oh, well, life is gambling. And walking across the street's a gamble. No, it's a risk. But it's not a gamble. Now, if someone says, I bet you $500 that you won't make it across the street, well, then yeah. Then it's gambling because you have what? A winner and a loser, a stake, an undetermined outcome. Farming. You know, I chuckle when I see this one. And if you talk to a farmer and ask him if they're gambling, they'll chuckle too. They're not having a lot of fun with that post hole digger on those days. They're not playing any game. They're hoping to be able to make a profit, make a living based upon hard, honest labor. Is there risk involved with farming? Yes. But it's not a gamble. Buying or selling stock. Again, this is one that gives people troubles as well. They say, wait, you're telling me to spend $2 on a lottery ticket is sinful, but to lose $1,000 on the stock market is not. Again, that comes from their misconception of what a stock is. A stock is simply a product. You're buying a product. You're buying a portion of a company. Just like you might buy a house or you might buy a car. It may appreciate in value. It may depreciate. The same is true with a stock as well. But when you buy a stock, that company then generates revenue, which they put back into the company, hoping to be able to generate more revenue, and thereby raising the price of the stock. You see how both win. There doesn't have to be a winner and a loser. Now, granted, both may lose. But that's the part of risk. It's not a gamble, because there doesn't have to be a winner and a loser. Same with door prizes. You know, those car companies, you'd be the 300th person to walk in our doors and you'll win a big screen TV. Well, you didn't risk anything. All you did was show up. No winner, no loser. They're certainly not losing because they're hoping to get more people, more customers in their doors. Flipping a coin to make a decision. Do we go to Taco Bell today or Pizza Hut? I don't know. You know, one loses there, they're both good. You're just making a decision. I mean, this is what they cast lots in the past that they might be able to arrive to a decision on what they ought to do. It wasn't a gamble they were taking. See, gambling ultimately is risking what is yours to gain someone else's. That's what it comes down to. It is covetousness. It is greed. Friends, it has nothing to do with the amount. It's all about the principle. God doesn't care if it's $2 or $2,000. Now, you see, that's where we have to break free from our type of thinking. The Bible says in Isaiah 55 that His ways are not our ways, nor His thoughts our thoughts. His ways and His thoughts are higher than ours. Now, I realize in our view, if someone steals a dollar, we might say that's just a small petty crime, a misdemeanor, if it's even that. But if someone steals $10,000, that's a felony. Does God look at the amount? No, he looks at the principle, the practice. It's condemned either way. It didn't matter the amount. And the same is true when it comes to this as well. We see $2 as harmless and $2,000, well, that's detrimental there. God looks at the principle. And we need to be able to, that's the challenge in life, to be able to look at things the way God looks at things. Because his ways are not our ways, nor his thoughts ours. And so that's what we have to do. So hopefully that helps understand gambling a little bit better. I'll just throw this one in for free as well. Gamblers Anonymous, the way they define gambling, these are people who are trying to help people out of that addiction. They say it's any betting or wagering, there's our wager, for self or others, whether for money or not, it could be something of value. No matter how slight or insignificant, the dollar figure doesn't matter. Where the outcome is uncertain, there's the undetermined event, or depends upon chance, or I love how they put, quote, skill. A lot of these people think they've figured the system out, and you can't convince them beyond any without any reason that they're going to lose. And they say this constitutes gambling. And I agree. Principle number 4. Do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. The golden rule. Gambling violates that golden rule. You might say, well, I'm not sure about that. You don't think so? Someone playing at the blackjack table loses all their money. What would you think of the winner that won all the money of all the people that are on the table said, did you like that? Did that feel good? No, losing is not winning to them. That's incredibly painful. Did you know that gamblers have a 15% higher suicide rate because losing is so painful? So how can you and I claim to love our neighbor when we express pleasure at their loss? And that's why the lottery tickets are so dangerous. Someone says, well, I can never go to Vegas and gamble on those tables, but I can take a couple dollar scratch-off ticket. See, what that does is take the face off the loser. You don't see them losing. In order for there to be a winner, there had to be bunches and bunches and bunches of losers. It may have just been a few dollars for you, but for them, it may have been the rent that month. The milk for the babies. But we don't see that there in the ticket. We need to start. Because we can't uphold the golden rule and gamble. Now, the next principle, and that is gambling, is a selfish ambition. This takes us over to Galatians chapter 5 once again. We've been in Galatians 5 a lot so far in our series, and we'll actually be in it a few more times today. Hopefully you're seeing that these things that we're talking about get back to what Paul was talking about as works of the flesh. And there in Galatians chapter 5, there verse 16, he says, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh. So he's telling us to walk a certain way and to avoid a certain path. Walk in the Spirit. Avoid the lusts of the flesh. Verse 17, for the flesh lusts against the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary to one another, so that you do not do the things that you wish. And again, these gamblers, losing is not winning to them. They're not wishing to lose. And what do they end up doing? They lose. And so they play some more, hoping to gain back what they lost, and all they do is end up losing more. And before they know it, that hole is so big that they can't climb out of it anymore. So that you do not do the things that you wish, Paul said. And there in this list of the works of the flesh, in Galatians chapter 5, verse 20, he says, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish
ambitions. And gambling could not be defined any better than that. It is greed. And that's why people do it. They don't spend $2 on a ticket hoping to win $2 back. They win a whole lot more than that. It's built on greed. And that's why ultimately it's an act of unfaithfulness to God. Because it assumes that God has not given us what we ought to have, what we deserve. And so this greedy, selfish spirit says, I'm going to go out and get it in an unlawful way. In a way that's detrimental to me and to my family. Could you ever imagine Jesus holding while hoping Peter and John would be folding that he might win the shirts off their backs? No, that's not the Jesus we know. Rather, he says in Acts 20, verse 35, Paul quotes him, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And gambling is the nemesis of that statement. It says, no, it's the exact opposite. It's much better to receive. And that's why, again, people say, well, this is for a good civic enterprise. This raffle ticket I bought. Then just contribute. It's more blessed to give. But you buy that ticket, you're looking to receive. Further, gambling seeks to circumvent God's approved methods of acquiring. And maybe I could have started here first, but it's here on this portion of the outline. Turn me over to Jeremiah 22. When we talk about gaining and receiving blessings, there's three ways in which the Lord has mandated that to take place. There's work for that, trade, exchange, buying and selling, right? Or receiving a gift. And in Jeremiah 22, there, verse 13, Jeremiah says, woe to him who builds his house by unrighteousness and his chambers by injustice. Notice this, who uses his neighbor's service without wages and gives him nothing for his work. So the Lord is awfully concerned about those that acquire in unlawful ways. Those that use essentially his neighbor's money, his neighbor's work, his neighbor's effort for free, gaining it without anything in return. Now, I can't again think of a better way to describe gambling. Taking everybody else's money without them working or without their labor and paying them and compensating them for their hard effort. Now, in Ephesians chapter 4, there verse 28, it says, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need. Paul says, we don't steal anymore if we're Christians. And by the way, I might even say that gambling is a form of stealing. Now again, someone says, wait a second, everybody knew they were pitching the money in. Okay, well, it's stealing by consent then. Does that make it right? It's taking what belongs to somebody else unlawfully. When one says they want their life taken and cut short, euthanasia, well, it was their consent. It's still murder. Does murder by consent make it right? Of course not. Same not with stealing by consent. He says, rather let him labor, working with his hands, that he may give. So we see that these are God's approved methods of acquiring, to work, to labor. Genesis chapter 3, all the way back in the garden, God says that man should work by the sweat of his brow, that he may give. As the Lord said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And also exchange there, to buy something of value. In Matthew chapter 13, notice verse 44. Here he says again, the kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid, and for joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. So he finds something of great value to him. He doesn't say, let's pull out the game card and let's try and make a wager for it. No, he sells what he has that he might buy this field. And again in verse 45, 46, again the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking beautiful pearls, who when he has found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had, and he bought it. Now gambling, friends, does not fit any one of these three things here. The Bible never commands the poor and the lazy to cut cards or yell bingo. No, that's not what they're to do. Well, further, principle number 7, and that is gambling is addictive. Gambling is addictive. Now I'm going to spend a little bit more time on this particular point here. I must admit, I'm ashamed to do so, but this I know to be true. When I was in high school, me and my friends often would play on the basketball courts. And we would play outside and play sports, but when winter came, you couldn't do that. And so we started a practice. We'd meet in one of the friends' basements, and we'd pull out the cards and begin playing poker for money. 25 cents was an ante, and maximum bid was $2 a hand. And we'd be doing that for months during the winter. And it began to grow inside you, this addiction for it. You'd go to school, and you'd be thinking about, when can I get out so I can get over there to my buddy's house? You'd be talking about it all the time, talking about it with others, about what you were doing and trying to get more involved in this gambling effort. Again, I say this to my shame. It was addictive. It got to the point where that was all you could think about. One book I found by Harry Levinson said, gamblers gamble as lovers love and drinkers drink, inevitably, blindly, under the dictates of an irresistible force. What a wonderful way to describe addiction. It's almost an irresistible force. Hard to put your finger on, but you know it's there. The compulsiveness behind it. The Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, that I, as a Christian, he says, I will not be brought under the power of any. No, a Christian ought to be in control of their passions and their desires. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 9, Paul says this, he describes those who desire to be rich. And again, that fits those that play the lottery. They're desiring to be rich. He says, they fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and harmful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierce themselves through with many sorrows. Paul says there's these individuals that have this passion to be rich, a drive for greediness. And he describes it as someone that takes a knife and begins plunging it through their abdomen. Can you imagine doing that? Piercing yourself through. No, that's foolish, we'd say. That's harmful to yourself. Paul says this attitude does that to you. It's harmful to you. And that's why there's Gamblers Anonymous, like AA. Because there's these people that have become so overcome by it. And you'll tell them, don't you realize what this is doing to you? Don't you see what it has done to your family? Don't you see how it has destroyed lives that you come across and touched?
And they say, yes, yes.
And then they go and do it again the next day. They pierce themselves through with many sorrows. They drown themselves into many foolish and harmful lusts. I found this article that I thought described so well the world of the compulsive gambler, and I'm going to read it to you here. It says, there is another common characteristic of compulsive gamblers. A lot of time is spent creating images of the great and wonderful things they're going to do as soon as they make the big win. They often see themselves as quite philanthropic, charming people. They may dream of providing families and friends with new cars, mink coats, and other luxuries. Compulsive gamblers picture themselves leading a pleasant, gracious life, made possible by the huge sums of money that they'll accrue from their, quote, system. They'll have servants. They'll have penthouses, nice clothes, charming friends, yachts, and world tours are a few of the wonderful things that are just around the corner after a big win is finally made. You know what's interesting? I've seen like 2020 shows, Nightlines, where they interview some of these individuals that have won the lottery. And some of them are just miserable. I remember one man said he wished he never won it. All the harm it has caused him and his family and his life. These are just dreams conjured up by Satan ultimately. This is not realities. So it goes on to say pathetically, however, there never seems to be a big enough winning to make even the smallest dream come true. When compulsive gamblers succeed, they gamble to dream still greater dreams. When failing, they gamble in reckless desperation, and the depths of their misery are fathomless as their dream world comes crashing down. Sadly, they'll struggle back, dream more dreams, and of course suffer more misery. No one can convince them that their greatest schemes will not someday come true. They believe they will. For without this dream world, life for them would not be tolerable. How sad. How sad that is. Does that sound like something you and I want to play footsie with? Want to dip our fingers into? Get close to the line with? It can snare you like that and take you away. And everything that you held dear in this life, destroy. See, gambling is directly connected with many evils. Jesus said, by their fruits, you will know them. They're speaking about false teachers. But what a wonderful principle to be able to establish other things as well and to see, ultimately, where this path leads. By their fruits, you will know them. Friends, this leads to all other kinds of evils as well. And that's what Paul says here, right? In 1 Timothy chapter 6. For the love of money is the root of what? One evil? No, all kinds of evil. This leads to so many more things as well. You know, Las Vegas has the highest crime rate per person. Youth are attracted to this, like I was when I was younger. The FBI has considered gambling one of six selected dangers for young people. It is destroying the young life of our nation. Like you saw from the figures there at the beginning, it is a problem that is growing worse and worse. It leads to crime, it leads to debt, it leads to divorce, it leads to bankruptcy, to homelessness, to child abuse, substance abuse. It leads to suicide. By their fruits, you shall know them. It starts with just a little bit. and it grows big. Maybe an office football pool. Before you know it, you're ensnared. You think alcoholics thought that they would get ripping drunk the very first time they took that first drink? You think they imagined in their mind's eye a home destroyed, a bank account that was in the red, their children turning away from them, the wife divorcing them? You think they thought that before they took that first sip? No. Do we want to go down this path? I pray not. I pray not. In the Gambler's Anonymous guidebook, it says, "The greatest loss that resulted from our gambling was neither time nor money, which are gone forever, but our sense of values." You see, they recognize this ultimately strikes the very core of who you are as a person. Your values. The money and these types of things, these are symptoms of the problem. Who are you? God's awfully concerned about that question. And that's why he says, "I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, present your bodies holy and acceptable, which is your reasonable service, and do not be conformed to this world, but rather be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Maybe you've not thought about the sin of gambling before. You need to start thinking about it now. We need to start thinking about how we'll train our children to watch out for this very harmful practice. Well, I told Brother Bob I had caught some of my material out that I made sure that I'd be able to finish on time. It looks like I had 1 minute to spare. So I'm thankful for your kind attention during this study, and hopefully it has been helpful for you. And again, if you have questions about this material or any of the material that you hear this week, again, please bring that to my attention and you'll be my dear friend. Thank you for your time.